Thanks to the Booker Prize Foundation, RNIB is able to make the winning book and the other books on the shortlist for their prestigious prize into formats that blind and partially sighted people can read. Available now in giant print, in braille, and in audio is All That Man Is by David Soloy.
Live all you can. It's a mistake not to. It doesn't so much matter what you do in particular, so long as you have your life. If you haven't had that, what have you had?
A clip from All That Man Is by David Soloy. He joined me in the RNIB Talking Book Studios and told me about the book.
It's a book in nine parts. The first part or chapter or segment, or I don't know what you call it really, has a central character who's 17 years old. The second has a slightly older guy, and the third slightly older again, and so on until the ninth chapter or story is about a guy in his 70s. So it's nine different characters, but I hope that the book as a whole gives a sort of picture of a whole life in a way.
So what links the stories together?
Well, I mean, the most obvious thing is the characters moving through life. In the background, you've also got the seasons changing. So the first story is set in April, the second in May, and so on through to December. It's really their relationship to each other within that structure, which is the most important thing that connects them to each other. And I think it does connect them to each other very strongly. The character in the last story is the grandfather of the kid in the first story. That is, I think, quite important when you come to the end of the book. It sort of creates, well, I was trying to create a sort of somewhat cyclical sense of time. And I feel very strongly that the book is a single unified work rather than a collection of stories.
When you're introducing a new character at every chapter or segment, is it quite hard because you've got to build that character profile once again?
One thing which I decided was that I wasn't going to... I mean, the characters don't have a great deal of backstory, sometimes virtually none. I don't really try to give them a huge amount of context in terms of their lives. I'm really focusing on them being what they are now in the present. I wasn't concerned to sort of build up a whole sort of past life for the characters. But having said that, of course, yeah, that you had to sort of, each story does have to sort of somehow hit the ground running, otherwise the tension and the narrative drive would be lost, yeah.
Now, each character is kind of fish out of water. They're a displaced person. And you yourself, you've been in London, you've been in Canada, you've been in Belgium, in Hungary. Is that displacement something you feel as well?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely, I think so. I mean, I think that the first story, I mean, the book grew out of a single story which was written for a one-off commission, which is, it's now the third story in the book, and it's about some Hungarians visiting London. And I wrote that story after I myself had been living in Hungary for a few years. And it's you know, very obvious that it was the sort of Anglo-Hungarian, or a story with a Hungarian end and an English end, that really appealed to me about that. And yeah, as you say, I've lived in a number of different countries. I, you know, my own sense of nationality is quite complex and contains certain ambiguities. So yeah, that's definitely a subject which is something that has an emotional... it's a fertile source of imagination, if I can put it that way.
Now, I was going to say, is it strange that the audio version, these nine different people have the same voice, but they don't. They've got three each. I've got the same voice, yeah.
I think it's three each. I'm not sure exactly how they're breaking it down, but it is being done by three different narrators, and that was something that actually I suggested when the audiobook was being planned, and I suggested it, you know, just thinking I might as well suggest it. I suppose it would make the book slightly more expensive to produce, so I wasn't that optimistic they would actually do it. So I was delighted when they took up the idea, and they have done it. So yes, it's being narrated by three different actors or narrators to capture in the voice that those stages of life, which is what the book's all about. So I think that will be very effective. It really adds an additional element to the text.
Logistics and money aside, would you have liked nine different narrators?
I did wonder about that. I don't know. I don't know. Nine might have been a bit disorientating, but I mean, yeah, why not? Yes, yes. Money, no object. Why not?
I am too old at any rate for what I see. What one loses, one loses. Make no mistake about that. Still, we have the illusion of freedom. Therefore, don't, like me today, be without the memory of that illusion.
Now, one thing we won't get as blind and partially sighted readers is the cover. Can you describe it and how it reflects the story?
The cover, yeah, the Jonathan Cape cover. It's a very beautiful cover. I was really happy with that design. It's a sort of collage of maps of Europe, all sorts of different locations, which reflects the fact that the story takes place, or the book takes place, in many different European locations. And it's also composed of nine interlocking triangles, which obviously reflects the fact that the book has nine segments. The colors are very beautiful. It's sort of bluish, greenish, mostly. And it's a very beautiful design.
Now, listening to your voice there, did you never consider reading the audio version?
No, I didn't. I'm not sure I'd want to do that. No, is the answer. I didn't consider it.
Because some authors, it sounds a certain way in their head and they want to get that across and they feel, not anxious, but they're not keen on giving it away to an actor to interpret it themselves.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But I mean, actually, I wrote at, when I was at university, I wrote a couple of stage plays and actually later in life, in my late 20s, I guess, I wrote a few radio plays for the BBC. And I actually find the process by which you give the text to somebody else who then interprets it in a kind of performative way, I find that fascinating and very exciting. I mean, I far from worrying that somehow the actor is going to betray my intention or something, I really enjoy the kind of additional input that they can give it, the additional dimension that they can give it.
That's kind of like Deborah Levy, who's also in the shortlist. She's got a playwriting background and she kind of has said she writes to be read out loud.
I'm not sure I'd go that far myself. Obviously, kind of reading, but it's true that reading it out loud is, in a way, the ultimate. You have to regard it, I suppose, as really the ultimate test of the prose. I mean, and it's always, you know, I obviously read from it myself at readings, short sections of the book. It feels great when it works as something which is being heard rather than read.
And finally, how important is it for you that your book is available to anyone regardless of their sight condition?
Well, it's very important. I mean, I think it's fantastic that that these audio versions are being made, and it's great. I'm very happy about it.
I was either at the right time too stupid or too intelligent to have it, and now I'm a case of reaction against the mistake. Do what you like so long as you don't make it. For it was a mistake. Live. Live.
All That Man Is by David Saloy is available in audio from RNIB, also available in Braille and giant print, and wherever books and audiobooks are sold. David, thanks so much for joining me today on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.